A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, September 5, 1982, entitled, On Being Available to Another, in the series, What the Church Has Forgotten, AA Remembers. The text for the sermon is Galatians 6, verses 1 to 10. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
I quote, our capacity to love reaches its full maturity when we can look upon the twisted features of a fellow human being in pain and not turn away in fear or disgust, but catch a glimpse of the face of the suffering Christ and minister to him in all simplicity and tenderness. That kind of maturity is the goal of the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That kind of maturity is the goal of Christian discipleship. That kind of maturity is expressed by the Apostle Paul in this letter to the Galatians as having Christ formed in us. And that kind of maturity is measured by the degree to which we can love another and by the degree to which we are willing to be available one to another. Being available to another is the theme of the 12th step of Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step program. It is the goal toward which all of the steps move. Bringing the person who has found sobriety, been restored to productive citizenship, serenity and happiness. Bringing him out of himself now and into the world of service with a ministry of compassion to those who are still in bondage to that slavery from which he now knows freedom. It's a natural, spontaneous kind of response to one who has found new life, to one who has experienced human transformation. And it is human transformation that we are about in the church as well. And our maturity will also be measured to the extent that we are able to love one another and move out of ourselves and be available one to another. That 12th step goes something like this. Having had a spiritual awakening, we will try to carry the message to others, telling how we found help, and we'll attempt to practice all of these principles in all of the affairs of our lives. 12-step work is the outreach program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it is that point at which the person who has been restored and transformed begins a ministry of compassion to all of those whose plight he knows only too well. Alcoholics Anonymous does not quibble about definitions, and perhaps I shouldn't either. But just for a moment, I have to say that the phrasing of that 12th step is not as fortunate as it might be. The phrase, to carry the message, may convey the same kind of thing that witnessing conveys in the church, as though one could simply tell one's story. Now, we know in the church that simply to tell the story, simply to witness with words, is insignificant, or is not insignificant, but it is insufficient. And we are in great danger of simply making preachments and pronouncements and proclamations. In its phrasing of that 12th step, I wish they had said something more than carry the message, because they mean a great deal more, and they probably are not as liable to the danger as we are in the church of simply stopping with carrying the message. For in the program of outreach of Alcoholics Anonymous, what carry the message means is that a recovering alcoholic will go anywhere, anytime, and do anything in order to help one who is in need. And what is involved in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is a community of compassion and concern and care, a flesh and blood fellowship, which creates the context in which the message can be carried. And so, while AA is not in danger of simply becoming wordy, I must say that 12-step could be better phrased in order to rule out the possibility of it ever falling into the trap that we in the church have fallen into, to think that it is enough to say words. Alcoholics Anonymous in its 12-step work is absolutely beautiful in its ministry of compassion and in the reclamation of human beings upon whom society in general has given up. And in its 12-step work, it has given to us in the church a model that we must emulate, because here again, what the church has forgotten, AA remembers. What the church has forgotten, namely, that Christian witness needs to become love in action, redemptive, reconciling, tangible love in action, AA remembers. And it remembers it because it cannot afford to forget it, because it lives moment by moment and day by day by the appropriation of that power and that grace, which is a constant reminder of the fact that it is only in the context of that caring community that one finds the succor and support that one needs in order to survive. This morning I want to deal in some detail with the manner and the method and the motivation of 12-step work as it's practiced through Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I can set that forth for you, then I simply have to say to you, go thou and do likewise. For Alcoholics Anonymous has borrowed a page from the Gospel and has put into practice that which is the church's calling as well. When AA is true to itself, it grows. And the phenomenal growth of Alcoholics Anonymous in our day ought to cause us to scratch our head and say, why? The phenomenal growth of AA, all the more phenomenal when one remembers that it is addressing only a limited number of people, a certain category of people, ought to make us sit up and take notice and ask, whence that phenomenal growth? When, as a matter of fact, the population of the church at best holds its own, and in terms of population growth is going backward every year. Alcoholics Anonymous gives us a model to emulate in terms of our Christian witness as we look at its execution of its 12-step work, its ministry of outreach, its ministry of compassion. And so, just for a moment, let's see what they do. First of all, the manner of their outreach. Alcoholics Anonymous is available. A recovering alcoholic will go anywhere, anytime, and do anything in order to help a person in need. This is, again, a spontaneous kind of response to the experience of new birth, of new creation, of new life. It is the natural flow of a life of gratitude that has experienced rescue and redemption. But its posture is that of availability. Its manner is that of availability. And I use that word on purpose, deliberately, in order to create the sense of the posture of this organization. For while a recovering alcoholic will heed a call for help and will go anywhere, anytime, and do anything that is needful and necessary, it is always in the terms of availability, of being there. There will be a response to every request, but there will never be the forcing of the program or the fellowship or the principles on anyone who is not ready and who has not requested the help. A recovering alcoholic is available to his brother or sister in need at the point of their need and the recognition of that need. But there is no proselytizing and there is no crusading. There is no forced evangelism in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when you think again of the phenomenal growth of this organization over the past 47 years, you cannot help but be impressed and take a second look. Its manner is that of simply being available. A lot of its work is not pleasant work. A lot of its work takes on a kind of urgency. It's sort of an emergency work. It's a rescue work. A lot of the work brings the alcoholic back to scenes that he would rather forget and in situations that he would rather avoid. But because of his gratitude, because of his compassion for the one who is suffering, he will go anywhere, anytime, and do what is necessary. He will be there at the moment, and he will stick there as long as necessary, and he will follow through consistently as long as there is an openness, a receptivity, and a request and desire for help. But he has found that it is fruitless and useless to try to scratch where people are not itching, to try to force something on someone who has not yet come to the profound conviction of his need. And so the manner is one of availability. And the method of AA in its 12-step work is that of caring presence and humble witness. Presence, being there, and witness, telling one's own story. And the adjectives are very important. A caring presence. He is there because he cares. He is there because there is compassion welling up in his heart. He has been in the shoes of the other person. He knows the hell, the agony, the loneliness, the hopelessness, the sense of futility that overwhelms the sufferer. And out of that compassion is born a care, which is mediated through a presence. Caring presence. Being there. And humble witness. Humility is the hallmark of all 12 steps. Without a most humbling experience, one can never get over step one. And each successive step cultivates the grace of humility. And by the time that one has gotten to the 12th step and is ready to reach out, to move out of himself, out of that new life, out of that circle of quiet, into active service and love, one does it very humbly. One tells one's own story, not in order to glory in one's past, not some kind of reverse pride in the depths to which once he had fallen, but rather he tells his own story in order that that sufferer may not feel so isolated, so alone. He tells his own story so that he might identify with the plight of the other, the agony of the other, and let the other one know that he knows. And in his caring presence, and in his humble witness, he becomes the instrument through which the victim may find the road to restoration and happiness. A caring presence, a humble witness, no preaching, witness, no judgment, unconditional acceptance, complete identification. And one of the little books, of which there are several in the AA publications, as Bill sees it, one of the co-founders of AA, he says in one poignant little paragraph, never address an alcoholic from some spiritual or moral mountaintop looking down upon him. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools that you have found useful for his inspection. Tell him how they work for you and give him friendship and fellowship. That's the method. A caring presence and a humble witness. And the motivation? Well, we've spoken about at least the first half of it. The motivation is compassion and a desire for self-preservation. First of all, the compassion, and that must be obvious. For one cannot walk through the hell that is the hallmark of alcoholic addiction and enslavement without having come to the end of the tunnel, looking back and feeling deeply for all of those who are yet suffering. He is there not out of some heavy sense of duty, some legalistic obligation, but he is there because he does genuinely care and he genuinely feels compassion. And all of the counsel of AA instruction, the one who engages in 12-step work is asked to look for no reward, to lay down no conditions, and to expect really no gratitude or appreciation. He is doing it as a selfless service. And then in the paradox of grace, when one genuinely engages in selfless service, one finds that it's the best spiritual therapy in the world. And so, a second motivation for the recovering alcoholic to reach out and to touch someone else is self-preservation for himself. For it is in precisely in, once again, going through that whole trauma, going through the drama of reclamation, being with someone, feeling with someone, putting one's arm around one, weeping, hoping, laughing, that one finds oneself renewed and strengthened, one's joy deepened. And certainly there is no greater satisfaction than to be the instrument of God's love and peace, the channel of God's grace to another human being. And so, in its manner, in its method, and in its motivation, obviously, Alcoholics Anonymous has borrowed a page out of the gospel and has given to us a model to emulate. As I mention all of those things, do they not sound strangely familiar? Have you not heard them again and again? Is this not precisely the biblical prescription for Christian witness? Is this not really what evangelism is all about? Surely it is. And having briefly set forth what is involved in 12-step work for Alcoholics Anonymous, I could say, go thou and do likewise and pronounce the benediction. But since this is a sermon, I suppose I ought to have a text, and I do have a text. And it comes out of that context of the letter to the Galatians. And I think simply to read that passage is to know that it breathes with the spirit of all those things that I've been speaking about this morning. That marvelous section in which Paul deals with the community of God's people which are called to be a community of compassion, a community of mutuality, a community of supportive love, a community of unconditional acceptance. All of those things that the body of Christ ought to live out in its concrete existence. The 25th verse of the 5th chapter could be a model written large over all of the 12 steps of the recovery program. Paul says, if the Spirit is the source of our life, let the Spirit also direct our course. And certainly the alcoholic is one who has reached out to a power beyond himself and has appropriated that power and is living in the flow of that power, so that that power is now directing the course of his life. What the church has forgotten, Alcoholics Anonymous remembers. The Christian faith, that the 12 principles are not simply abstract propositions to be memorized, to be reiterated, but rather a way of life. If the Spirit is the source of our life, then let the Spirit direct the course of our life. And then he goes on to address concretely this community of God's people, where he cautions against conceit, challenging one another to rivalry, jealousy, envy, and then says, if a man should do something wrong, my brothers, on a sudden impulse, you who are endowed with the Spirit must set him right again very gently. Whence comes the judgmental spirit so characteristic of the church? Whence comes the legalistic prescriptions and the discipline without compassion? Whence comes that spirit that has shaped the church, which is so foreign and alien to the spirit of AA and to the spirit of this council, the apostle? If one has fallen, restore him, and very gently. Always remembering that one might oneself someday be tempted. Let him who thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. And consequently, with compassion, with care, with gentleness and kindness, restore the one who is falling. The whole purpose of it is the restoration of the fallen. And Paul goes on, admitting that life is not easy, and says, help one another bear these heavy loads. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. If one wants to be a legalist, then let us be legalistic in enforcing the law of Christ, which is the law of love, which is the law of burden-bearing, and dealing with one another in gentleness and kindness and compassion, for we understand that we are all vulnerable, all made of the same clay, all cut from the same fabric. And he goes on with all kinds of good counsel, but he says, finally, never tire of doing good. And as opportunity affords, do good to all men, especially the members of the household of faith. A community of caring, compassionate ministry one to the other. Now, let me take that for just a moment and apply it to the outreach of the church. If the 12th step in the AA program is its outreach program, then why did I not select a passage of Scripture that deals specifically with evangelism, with Christian witnessing per se? I chose this passage deliberately in order to make a bold statement. A bold statement, which is what the church needs, is not more evangelism, but simply more compassionate, caring ministry within and without. It is too easy simply to witness or to pass out a tract or to say a word and cleanse one's conscience and absolve one of responsibility and to go on one's way without getting involved with another underneath one's skin, caring, identifying, being present to, available to. Christian witness is most effectively carried out through a caring ministry of compassion. And what the church needs more than anything else is not another crusade, not an evangelism committee, not door-to-door shoppers, but rather more Stevens workers who will go one-on-one and care and be present to and available to, becoming involved in the life of another. We forget that when God made His dramatic move toward us, it was not a message from a prophet, but a Word become flesh, the Word of Jesus Christ. And it is only in the context of grace, in the environment of compassionate care, that we may tell our story, and that our story will be heard. Oh, friends, we are so wordy. Fancy a preacher admitting that. Words, 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 advice. Counsel, words, 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 words. Print more tracts, write more brochures. Pay for more broadcasts. Words, 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 words. And what the world needs is love. Concrete, tangible love in action. Availability, caring presence. And once the caring presence has been established, then the story may be told, and then words are necessary. But evangelism that does not happen in the context of care for a person is not worthy of the name of Jesus Christ. And perhaps AA is growing while the church is languishing, because what the church has forgotten, AA remembers. Oh, this is not really a new note at Christ Community. I believe over the past decade we have experienced somewhat of this. As just an interesting aside, let me share with you a note that Gordon sent me this week. The statistics for the Reformed Church for 1981 have just been published. The word is now out. And in 1971, we were a community of 678 souls, and at the end of 81, something like 2,450. In 1971, we were 130th in size in the Reformed Church in America. And at the end of 1981, we were four. And in Michigan in 1971, we were 36th in size, and today we are the largest congregation. And even to share that with you, I share that with you because it's sort of a victory for Gordon. We've always had a little running joke about that. 10 years and he made it number one. But even to share that with you has a peril, because it so easily leads to pride. And we can so easily fall into a kind of complacency and satisfaction, as though numbers were the important thing. There is an Institute of Church Growth in Pasadena, California, an institute which is founded precisely in order to help churches to grow, and it's stresses through all of its literature and through its seminars that the church has an imperative to grow. And in the New Testament, obviously, we are called to witness and consequently to grow. But I have never been impressed with the Institute of Church Growth, and I have never been impressed with their literature. They have approached the whole thing scientifically, and they have enunciated certain sociological principles which will make possible church growth. And I really don't like any part of it. Church growth smacks to me of institutionalism. Church growth smacks to me of competition. Church growth smacks to me of pride. Church growth puts the emphasis in the wrong place. The only place where numbers have any place in the evangelizing of the church is to the extent that numbers point to people who have been reached, who have been touched, who have been healed by grace. The problem with the church is that its institutional concerns, its confessional loyalties, its traditions, its liturgies, its rules of order have all taken preeminence over people. And it is people that are primary. It isn't really very important that we're loyal to our confession or loyal to our liturgy or loyal to our book of church order. Because sometimes confessions and liturgies and constitutions can militate against the health and healing of the individual, and the only thing that counts is that a person be restored by the grace of God. Alcoholics Anonymous is anonymous so that no one will ever get the glory. Alcoholics Anonymous has remained low profile, eschewing any kind of institutional glory, trying to build a great structure. The church has become a great institution. It has a vested interest. It's got a lot to lose. And it drains us of that free-flowing compassion that allows us simply to be available, to be present, to be the mediators of the grace of God flowing through us. The only thing that is important is that people are touched, healed by the grace of God. Then Christ is magnified. Then God is glorified. And it is as simple being available to another.